This is episode 15, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
Hey, Eco Warriors, how's it going? We are almost fully booked for our underground farm tour of Farm One, happening on February 23rd. I'm so excited for our first ever meetup. I think there's one spot left. If you're the lucky last person interested in coming along, feel free to email me or join the Facebook group. Thank you for listening to stories of female eco warriors from around the globe. Please, if you're enjoying this podcast and these stories, subscribe, rate, and share this podcast to your network. Your reviews ensure that we can reach more people and spur more eco warriors to action. This week's guest is Lillian Liu. She is the Manager of Global Partnerships in Corporate Sustainability for the United Nations. I saw Lillian speak at a UN Open Assembly event regarding sustainable fashion, and I had the opportunity to connect with her afterwards. Lillian is actually speaking at another event this week taking place on Tuesday, January 30th at the UN. The event is open to all, and I've linked the details for the meetup event page in the show notes. I highly encourage you to check out the event. It's actually quite incredible to go and visit the UN. It's a beautiful location on the Upper East Side, and it's always so fascinating to hear about what's happening in the global sphere. Lillian shares some really great advice, and she's just very down to earth as a person. I love the resources that she mentions and the experiences that she shares. She also turns one of my questions around on me again, and she tells a really funny story at the end about when she went camping in Patagonia. So let's get trash talking.
Welcome, Lillian, to Trash Talking.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
So, Lillian, tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
So, I manage partnerships at the United Nations Global Compact. And for those who don't know, the UN Global Compact is the world's largest corporate sustainability initiative. So we are a principle-based framework where we basically support companies to advance UN goals and UN objectives.
So cool.
These 10 principles, they cover the environment, they cover human rights, labor issues and anti-corruption, and they're all grounded in universal UN declaration. You know, so in this initiative, we have more than 9,000 businesses that are part of it and that basically committed to advancing these principles. You know, our job is really to support them in different ways through issue guidance and expertise. We have working groups with them. We develop tools, resources that they can use, you know, to implement in their own business strategies. You know, being an international organization, we also facilitate that type of multi-stakeholder conversation and collective action. One of the kind of most valuable things with working with us, because that really enables them to work in partnership with important organizations, sometimes even governments.
Awesome. And so what does that translate into as far as like the type of work that you're doing?
I think that's a good question. Of course, there are many different roles. You know, we have basically our headquarters in New York City, but we also have networks around the world where our network colleagues work with companies on the ground to advance sustainability. Personally, you know, as a partnerships person, my main focus is really to make connections between companies and the UN. So what I do is to support UN colleagues that are interested in working with the private sector, companies connect with the right UN organizations. It's really, you know, helping people to navigate the landscape a bit and making those connections. And, you know, we focus on developing guidance and tools on how to partner with the UN. We sometimes throw actual matchmaking events, both quite formal, you know, at the CEO level with the Secretary General, et cetera. So, but we also do more casual ones where people can actually meet in person or online. Online we have an online platform dedicated to actually UN business partnership. We call it sometimes sort of like an Airbnb for companies in the UN, where you can post partnership projects and connect them. Because the network is so big and you know, we work with kind of a global agenda, so it is quite important for us to leverage that. And then I would say the final big bucket is the policy work that we do, setting the political agenda as well, a business voice as well to the UN, or really translating what comes out from the UN in terms of what is important for businesses to think about.
That sounds like really intense work. How did you get your start in doing that?
So I'm originally from Sweden, but with Chinese heritage. And when I grew up, I was kind of in this cultural context, I guess, where, you know, I was living in a society where you spoke a lot about social justice and transparency, you know, in Sweden. And then I would spend the summers in Shanghai, where my parents are from. And there was this really aggressive economic growth going on there, seeing it every year because I would go back every summer. And it was really quite impressive, but also daunting. And I think that really got me thinking about different international context and development very early on, how it can happen in different ways. Yeah, I think that's when I started thinking about international affairs, global issues, started working when I was in grad school, etc. I got more and more interested in more sort of non-traditional development methods, you know, really moving away from the more traditional aid discussion, the North versus South, looking at what I thought were more sort of innovative or exciting areas through collaborating between the public and private, where businesses are a key driver to sustainability. I felt you could achieve a lot more engaging the private sector and companies.
But like, you didn't just like go to the UN website and apply for this position, did you?
Actually, started off as an intern at the Global Compact.
Okay.
And I've stuck around. They couldn't get rid of me.
Where did your interest in this type of work start?
I remember one of my first internships back then. You know, I was out of undergrad, fresh out of undergrad, and I was working at the Swedish consulate in Shanghai, and we did a lot of trade promotion work, but also Sweden has always been kind of a leader in CSR or corporate social responsibility. So we focused a lot on doing business sustainably and responsibly at the time. So I got introduced to like that kind of concept pretty early. I also worked for a while in the sustainable fashion space specifically, so looking at the textile and apparel industries and how that we can be more sustainable there. I was at an NGO called Redress, also based in China then. Of course, China is of huge importance when it comes to sustainable fashion. It's the world's sure. largest textile exporter. I think they make like 43% of all clothing that we wear or something. But yeah, at the time it wasn't really, I think it was just starting, and now it's really become an issue that people know about. And
is this something that you studied in school?
I did take classes in my master's degree. I went to New York University, but it was more an interest in learning on the job, actually. In my undergrad, I was studying kind of European sciences and political science, and then I did a master's in public administration. Most of what I use in my work is really things that I've learned on the job. Different experiences have definitely been helpful. I think that's the best way to learn, because even if you learn something in the classroom, it's just, you know, how do you apply that? And you never know what you're going to need.
Do you have career advice for someone looking to pursue this type of work?
A few things that I've kind of gathered throughout the years is, one, I mean, get some international experience. If you want to work in development, then, you know, you need to have an open mind and understand the world. And I think in order to do that, you also need to see it. So definitely helpful to have experience working or studying abroad, travel, languages, I think is pretty important. It opens doors. The reason I was able to get some of those internships in the beginning, even if I had zero experience, is because I spoke Chinese and other languages, and really, you know, spend the time to do it, you know, take a year to live in that country and learn that language. So writing and thinking about those issues that you're passionate about. For me, at least, it's helped a lot to write about those issues, even just for myself, because that just keeps my mind fresh and up to date. And it's also nice because you can kind of reach out to professionals. Say you're writing an article, it's a nice way to connect with someone, learn from them, but also train yourself and get up to speed on different issues.
So would you recommend, other than like a specific language, like if people are interested in, say, work in Central America, then, you know, learn Spanish.
I think if you're working in sustainability, if you want to work for the UN, it's good to have both private sector and nonprofit experience, at least for being at the Global Compact, since we work with businesses and they're kind of one of our biggest stakeholders. We really welcome people with private sector experience. It's helpful to know how the people you work with think. You know, having kind of a versatile background is not a bad thing at all. I think there are a lot of things you can learn on the job, like in terms of expertise, like sustainability, but being a fast learner and having some of the basics, like if you're going to work in Central America, then yeah, learn Spanish for sure, because you're going to miss out on so much if you don't speak the local language. You know, you're going to do a better job if you're able to connect with the people. I feel like companies these days are really advancing the agenda, sometimes more than government. I just think in the end, if you're not happy where you are, then there's a risk that you won't fulfill all the potential that you have.
That's fantastic advice.
Maybe try a few different things and see what works for you. I mean, that's the beauty of these times, I feel like, because you're no longer obliged to work for 10 years in a company and then maybe move to the next. You can kind of float around a bit and it's not frowned upon. It's just, it's encouraged.
Any big challenges that you faced in your life or your career?
I don't know if it counts as a major challenge, but sometimes I ask myself, what is the most impactful thing to do? So that relates to your earlier question around what organization to be in, kind of what role to pick. And, you know, being kind of at the headquarter level is great in so many ways, because we support in setting the agenda and really, I guess it's the more kind of top-down approach. Like, is that the most impactful thing, or is it being, you know, on the ground, working on local, bold projects, really implementing them? That's something I ask myself, because that's hard to say where you're making the most impact. And that's something we ask ourselves too at the UN. And it's always hard to know, you know, after 17 years of work in corporate sustainability, where can you really see a difference?
I love this quote, and like everyone keeps saying it to me lately. Do you want to make a small impact at a big company or a big impact at a small company?
Right.
And I think about this a lot now.
What do you think?
I really like making a big impact at a small company, and maybe that's just like a very personal preference, but I like seeing a lot of traction on what I'm working on. But I do see a lot of value in working at a larger company. I think there's a lot more that you get as benefits to your professional development company, and people who are really self-starting, they can get that professional development on their own at a small company. So I think I'm kind of taking that path right now. But I think at some point it'd be really interesting to work at a large company. I haven't worked at a company bigger than like 50 ever in my life.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to try new things, and, you know.
Yeah. Have you had like a really inspirational moment, like, since you've been working in this field?
I mean, I feel like somehow, you know, working at an organization like the UN, the day-to-day stuff, you might feel, you might not see that direct impact. As you said, you're making a small impact at a big organization. But once in a while, when you really manage to achieve something, then you're kind of like, whoa, did that really happen? You know, I'm not on the climate team, but for all our whole organization, when the Paris Agreement went through, that was really kind of a moment for us. We just kind of felt like, wow, this actually happened. Businesses are really involved. And that felt really powerful, because that was a lot of work by every single person at the UN. So when you have those moments, you're like, wow, okay, it's all worth it. I mean, it's always worth it. But, and you can live off those for a while.
Is that how you get inspired on like a day-to-day basis?
Of course not. I always get inspired daily. I mean, talking to businesses, I feel like there are so many companies now that are so interested and so passionate in sustainability and that really want to make a change. Almost somehow it's a question of how do we support all of them, you know, with our resources and all the constraints that we have, how do we support every single one? And that's really inspiring when you see companies that take the lead, because, you know, in some countries, governments might not be as supportive. So businesses themselves have to go ahead and implement change. And that kind of thing is really cool, I think.
That is a really great thought. Do you have any role models or people that have really like inspired you, or maybe there are even companies that really inspire you?
I could always say like my parents are my role models, but I think also in terms of companies, I mean, there are so many kind of leaders out there. If I was in business, I would look to companies like, obviously, Patagonia always comes up because I think they just have so much integrity and they just were in it from the start. And they're also lately, I mean, I'm obviously very interested in fashion. So there's been a number of quite inspiring fashion companies lately that popped up, I think, on the scene. I think everybody knows Reformation, but I mean, they just are doing a great job in making sustainability look really cool.
I know there's like all of this like greenwashing and some other things that I think can make you feel a little uncertain about the companies that you're supporting. But mm-hmm. I think, like you said, there's some extent to when you get to a certain point that like if a company is fully in on this idea, it does come mm-hmm. through in everything they do. It's like built into the DNA of the company.
Definitely. Yeah, I think we'll see more of that.
Do you have any suggestions for like resources or any books or movies that you think like people should go to or watch if they're interested in these ideas and they want to kind of learn more?
I've been obsessing a lot about sustainable fashion lately, and I read this book called Overdress. Have you read that?
Mm-mm.
It's actually my former boss, Greed Dress, who recommended it. And it's just an amazing book. I mean, it basically tells the story of fast fashion, how it happened. And, you know, it goes into every single aspect of the supply chain. But, you know, it's really interesting to read, like, the history of the fashion market in the U.S. and globally and how it's become what it is today. And I was just reading it and being wowed at every every other page. The True Cost movie? I think that one is kind of a staple these days. I also saw that River Blue film lately. It's also interesting. And then, actually, something that I've been enjoying lately is those Fashion Revolution fanzines.
Yes.
I think they're so good. And, I mean, it really just shows, like, you know, the power of the community and how many smart people there are out there. And
they take, like, a very positive outlook on this very harrowing issue.
No, definitely. So that I'm definitely following them.
That's great. And what are your three tips for someone who is looking to live a more eco-conscious lifestyle?
I think, you know, you can kind of break them down into consumption habits, use and consumption personally. And then one is sort of shopping. And the third one is knowledge. And so mm-hmm. in terms of the consumption habits part, like, you know, if we as individuals use less resources or maybe use more recycled resources and can find like alternative ways of consuming, then we can come a long way and we can, you know, lighten the burden on the resource drains that we have. So reusing or borrowing where you can. I mean, nowadays there's so many new apps allowing us to like mm-hmm. borrow items from your neighbor for free. Maybe rent cheaply mm-hmm. from a stranger or a brand or recycle our stuff much more easily. I think, you know, that's really minimizing our resource footprint is really essential. And the second one, I mean, I realize shopping is an essential part of life in a way. Like, you know, there will be times when we need to get stuff. And so when we do, it's good to buy wisely and buy sustainably if we can. So, you know, thinking more long term, ideally buying from brands that have certifications that produce sustainably, that use sustainable design techniques, consider social factors, and really, really look for those alternatives. And there are also ways now that can simplify that, you know, like databases for sustainable brands or like Chrome plugins, where you can kind of have pop-ups of all suggestions of all sustainable alternatives. The reality is, like, I think they say that fast fashion garments are worn like less than 5 times on average. That's not a lot. And, you know, if we actually double the use of our clothing, or if you use a piece of clothing from 1 year to 2 years, instead, we could reduce emissions from the fashion industry by like 24%. And that's like 1/4 of all the emissions that come out. So, you know, as individuals, we can make changes by the choices that we make. And then the third final tip, I would say, know your brand. I mean, I know it sounds kind of corny or sounds like a given, but really it's only when you know where your clothes or your products come from, what they're made of, that you'll be able to know what the brand is and what you represent by wearing the brand. And if enough people ask the question, then brands and shareholders will also care. And it's really when shareholders care, that's when we can bring sustainability to the boardroom, so to speak, and can influence mm-hmm. businesses. become more sustainable also.
Can we talk about like greenwashing a little bit? Because I feel like this is one of the issues is that like you can completely subscribe into a brand and what they do, but there's only so much of a level of transparency that you can sometimes get out of what's happening inside of a company. And there's only so much that companies can tell, especially if they're like publicly traded sometimes. Like there's a lot of constraints on businesses to do the right thing sometimes.
Totally. No, I mean, definitely. And I think it's something we sometimes struggle with at the Global Compact too. We get the question, okay, well, you have all these businesses that are part of your initiative, but how do you make sure that they're doing the right thing?
Yeah.
Of course, like, we're not a watchdog. We're not an audit body or kind of that's more of a civil society role in a way. Our role is like being a standard setter and leadership framework, a guide for businesses. We're a voluntary initiative and we try to have more of like an open approach, working with companies that might not be perfect, but that can improve rather than not letting them in, so to speak. But the way we do it is like we have companies report on progress every year through something we call the communication on progress, on how they advance the different principles and UN goals. And if they don't do that, you know, they can get delisted from being part of the initiative. And we also have due diligence, integrity criteria. I'm not a specialist on that. I have team members that are placed to speak about that, but definitely processes in terms of like who we partner with and who should come to our events and who should speak at our events, etc. I think as a consumer navigating that space, it is really hard. And that's why I think you have to ask the question, right? Like, and of course, companies can still say, well, we are doing XYZ, so. But if you know about the issue, the more you know, the easier it's going to get to see through it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I understand that, like, some people say that vegan is sustainable, but is it really sustainable? Shirt that is not leather or, but, you know, did it really come from a sustainable source just because it's not animal skin?
Yeah.
It might be even polyester or something else, and it's not biodegradable, and it takes, you know, maybe I think it's like more than 200 years to biodegrade. Whereas, say it's leftover animal skin, then maybe that's a better option. But I try to, when I at least get confused and I'm not sure what to do, I try to look for like certifications specifically. Yeah. And you kind of need to do a little bit of homework there to know for that product what kind of certifications are there. But at least that's an indicator that, you know, the company is serious. There are third-party organizations involved. So it's not just we're doing this and that therefore we are. It does require, like, work from the consumer to be sustainable. I mean, even if it's getting easier and the options more abundant now. But, I mean, I just think, personally, what I'm excited about is kind of some alternative ways of consuming clothing. I mean, of course, with you wouldn't want to, like, rent underwear, but or maybe you would. Who knows? Right? Who knows? Maybe we should start a business and start leasing underwear. Could be something. But, you know, I think companies like Rent the Runway are doing a great job in making it easy for consumers to not buy, but do something else instead. And there are more like that. And then also, I mean, recently I kind of rediscovered vintage. So I feel like if you really want to be sustainable, then, you know, buying something that already exists secondhand is never a bad option.
My like New Year's Eve dress was like Goodwill fine.
Nice. I bought mine at Beacon's Closet.
It's so interesting. I think there's like a lot of like misconceptions around like thrifting and stuff. Even, you know, like people are like, oh, that's for like hipsters, and it's like not really like for me. But like I found some of my like basic clothing at secondhand shops.
Totally. I mean, I get a lot of basics there too. Like, you know, they always have really nice like wool cardigans or kind of those classic timeless pieces that have been around for ages and that, you know, that are just there because they've always been here or they've been here for so long. And I really like buying those timeless pieces that probably somebody's grandma owned.
Have you done anything crazy in the name of nature sustainability?
You mean as in like protesting naked on Times Square or...
Really?
No, I haven't done that.
Although, oh my God, I was like...
No, it'd be amazing, but well, I'm not sure how to answer that question. Have you?
That's okay. I think going to a random desert island to do conservation work and like plant trees on a desert island in the Caribbean, that was pretty crazy.
Where?
I literally just found it online. I was like searching. I was like Central and South America volunteer conservation work. And it was like this like reforestation project. So I like lived at a research station in the middle of nowhere. We had to have like water delivered. We were off grid. It was like solar powered. We had a like dumping compost toilet, which was essentially a bucket. And we like spent all day like digging holes and planting trees and like taking care of seedlings and parrots.
Wow. That's cool. I definitely spend a lot of time in nature. And I remember we were hiking with a few friends in Patagonia in Chile, and we were going, you know, camping thing, and we had to walk for like 10 hours with a heavy backpack through the jungle, basically. And once we got there, of course, I mean, there's like no electricity, no signal. We were just like 3 days in the forest. We didn't buy enough food. I'm not a great chef, to be honest.
Oh, no.
And I was supposed to plan the food intake, and we were like starving for 3 days, you know. The last day, my friend brought some like energy gummies that we were all mocking him for when we started the trip. We're like, huh, no one's gonna want to eat that. And we were like trying to like savor them in our mouth for like hours. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. But I don't know if nature was very happy with us though.
No, but it's always like a good lesson to learn.
Oh my god, it's so hard.
you learn eventually. I had a very good teacher. When I was living down in New Zealand, I was dating a guy who was from New Zealand, and he taught me, like, everything I know about, like, camping and backpacking.
Oh, amazing. So lucky.
Yeah. I know. You just need, like, a nature guru person to, like, teach you about what to do in the wilderness.
That's true. I mean, I should have been more strategic and, like, okay, we need, like, a nature person as part of this group. And never have me be responsible for food, by the way.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Lillian, thank you so much for your time. I do want to make sure that we get people in touch with you if they're interested or if they just want to learn more about what you're working on. So how can people find you?
Well, they can send me an email. I'm on lillianyliu@gmail.com, or I'm pretty active on LinkedIn and Instagram as well. You can just search for Lillian Liu and I should be able to pop up.
I'll make sure the link is for people in the show notes.
Perfect. Thank you as well.
I thought that this topic where I discussed with Lillian about corporate responsibility and sustainable consumption was particularly interesting because as I've been settling into my apartment in New York City, I've really struggled with purchasing sustainable products like pillows and hangers. I actually spent a couple of weeks debating between natural latex or lamb wool filled pillows and whether or not to buy wood or bamboo hangers. It was really difficult to make these types of decisions, and I wonder who else is struggling with these same issues. Hopefully, in future episodes, I'll be bringing you interviews from some of the people who are heading these sustainable household companies and also talking about more sustainable everyday products like chocolate. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Trashy Beauty Co. or write me and tell me about what you want to hear on the podcast. I'd love to hear from you. What are you struggling with on your journey to sustainability? Do you have any questions our guests can answer for you? Email me at barbara@trashybeauty.com. Tune in again next time, Eco Warriors. Stay green.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram at trashybeautyco.